And welcome to the FPL Game Week 32 Net That Haul Matchups Show. I am Gabriel at FPL Lens on X, and it's April 5th, 2024, about 1:08 p.m. here in the Sonoran Desert Pacific time now. Joining us from across the continent, then across a pond, then over to an island, Kieran FPL underscore discomfort, how are you? Thanks for joining us this on short notice again, this short turnaround.
No problem. Yeah, doing well, and it is short turnaround, isn't it? We're sort of having one day without any football and having to make decisions pretty quickly. So happy to be back on here again, and thanks for having me back.
Right on. So given the time crunch here, we're going to get right to it. We're not going to waste any time. We're not going to go over our scores. We're not going to go over what happened midweek. We're not going to go over anything except for we're only going to look ahead, Kieran. And I think, hold on, the way to do that is obviously Mr. Palmer here, obvious. The way to do that is to start with the FPL philosophy. We'll say hello. Actually, let's start with some hellos before we get to the philosophy, because the hellos gets more difficult later because more people join the chat. So the nine of you that are here, smash that like for us. We got some good friends in the house. BW Splitta, EN. I don't know who EN is. They came drop by to say we're late. Apparently they don't know us. Podna says, what's up? Podna's here for some pain because he knows we're going to trash United most of this show. BW Split, I said, Claire is in the house. Evening to you. And FPL team, Peter's in the house. What's up, Peter? How you doing? What's up, Podna? And here we go, right to the FPL philosophy. It comes to us from Voltaire, and it says, so I changed the wording a little bit because the original wording is gendered. So I just made it more modern. Judge a person by their questions rather than their answers. This got me thinking because, and what I mean when they say judge a person, I guess my recommendation would be like judge yourself. So everyone's coming into this game week with all the answers in the world, right? Aiton Nouri's the answer. Foden's the answer. Friggin' Palmer's the answer. Gordon's coming back. He's the answer. Darwin is the answer. Everyone's the answer. But what's the question, right? So I see people like Foden has a million transfers in right now, right? But I think and a lot of people are selling good assets for him. Saka, for example, Son is still a good asset. So I don't think they're asking the question before they're coming to that answer. So it's just a little reminder to sit back and ask a question. And asking questions is just as important as finding answers. So what do you think, Kieran?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, particularly when it comes to the transfer flurry and the reactions, because the games are so close together. We are going to be influenced by things that we've literally seen yesterday. And it will impact the decision-making because you don't have as long to sit on it. I think it also, this applies to the FPL game week itself, right? Where throughout shows like this and the podcast we listen to and everyone's looking for all the content, we're asking the question of who's got the best fixture, who should I be able to get in there? Doesn't necessarily mean that they'll answer that by returning all of those nice matchups like a Salah against Sheffield United with anything whatsoever. So it's not necessarily that the outcome's wrong in those situations. The questioning was still correct and the decision-making along it. So as long as you continue down that line of thought and you're asking the right questions in general, you're probably just going to do better.
Yeah, right on. And Suhaib has joined us and Colm Bugler's in the house as well. So we will get some Fulham thoughts from him. Nice. We are making record time. We are under 5 minutes in, already getting to the first matchup of the game week. Crystal Palace hosting Manchester City, and the stats, I mean, the maps look good. It look like what you would expect, but the stats are really surprising here. Manchester City or Crystal Palace 1.47 net XG, Manchester City 1.52 net XG. Everything kind of in a light red shade there compared to other fixtures this game week. Oh, no wonder. Yeah, so I included it. You know, actually, I'm working on some things behind the scenes, maybe for next season or something. And it's kind of inspired by what you were saying. So I've included the XG per shot and shots per 90 that each team has. and respectively home and away respectively. So Manchester City, they're almost 20 shots per 90, but look at their XG per shot. It is quite low. So if they are getting low, if there's a player who's getting low volume of shots for Manchester City, potentially, even if they are a big name player like Erling Haaland, there could be some shade to throw there. As far as the maps are concerned, XT map, look at heavy deep red on the flanks for Manchester City, blue across the board for Palace, maybe some a little bit later on the right. XG map kind of concurs flanks, but again, it highlights that left side. So XG left side, XT left side, and then zonals are central. It looks like central zones creating mostly for the left for this one. But for you, Kieran, does it just depend where Foden plays?
Yes and no. I think Foden playing and his impact on the game, would he necessarily have had that impact if Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland were both on that pitch? And of course, that itself impacts his positioning, but overall how much flexibility he has to move across the pitch and how much the others are looking for him. So I think either way, he's just... I still expect him to go well in a game like this if he starts, and we'd expect him to start off the back of a hat-trick performance. I don't really see a sort of benching in preparation for Tuesday when they're kicking off so early on the weekend. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because it just seems like Palace aren't necessarily significantly better, but they're not conceding as many goals in each of the games. So they're still conceding goals, but they are keeping it tighter. So in a game like this, I don't think it's necessarily one where City are going to have a fun day out. I think it will be a tight one, and I think they'll see a lot of the ball again, and they'll have a lot of chances. But if we're looking at those chances, are they going to be high XG chances, or are they going to be sort of almost those frustration ones from range, which may be taken by a Foden, a KDB, a Bernardo, who all might be frustration from range, but they all do still have a lot of talent. And if you give them that time and space, then it could result in a goal.
Yeah, and you bring up that point. You don't see Foden being rested after a hat-trick. And Colm asks, cue the Foden rest this game week. And I don't know. Yes, there's plenty of time for rest between this game against Palace and Madrid next week. But there's not much time for rest between the previous game and this week and this game. So if that creates an injury, well, what you don't want is Foden getting hurt for Madrid next week, right? And he went hard. So why not let him go into Madrid on the back of a hat trick rather than whatever happens or whatever results he gets by playing in this one? So we obviously have no idea. We're not inside ITKs or anything like that. I think there's some logic to rest Foden is what I would say. I wouldn't be so quick to just bring him in, even if he is a good asset, because I think just the next few weeks are super tricky. And there's opportunity in the next few weeks as well. So if you go down one direction that has risk, let's just say Foden, right? And Foden gets rested. And the direction that you didn't take, there's opportunity, right? We'll get to some of those fixtures. Then the delta is quite big, right? So I think just that if there's a little bit of risk, go for a different opportunity with a similar upside, I think would be my recommendation.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's one of those where we've seen with City, if Foden doesn't start, you wouldn't expect him to necessarily come on. So if you own him, absolutely, you're starting him in this fixture. But for the people that are maybe rushing to get him in off the back of it, that is a good point, that we are only a few days away on that turnaround, and he did play till the 80th, and it's not as if they don't have many other options. And then it is, if I'm not mistaken, they've got sort of Luton in between the Real Madrid games and then the FA Cup game. So you've only really got that losing game and three non-FPL games that he'll probably be heavily involved in, where anything can happen.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then if people did bring Palace players into the team, I mean, there are plenty. I think the biggest questions this week aren't actually about transfers. I think it's quite easy to roll depending on your situation, of course. But the biggest questions are about starts. So, you know, if you have an Eze, I think he's easily benchable for someone like Muniz or something like that. So, Yeah, I think anything else for this one? Should we move on to the next?
Yeah, I think we can move on.
Okay. Oh, well, City, are you captaining? Let's talk about Haaland, right? We didn't talk about Haaland as a captaincy option.
It's interesting how much it's all changed, right? Where we're looking at a game, City up first, and we're not even discussing Haaland as a captaincy option. I think if I'm looking at these matchups, it's the least exciting part of the pitch is where Haaland's operating. And I'm not saying we'll sort of want to overly rely on this. He is going to be the focal point for them. And Haaland might only have one shot in the game. He could score from it. Like, he could do a Darwin and not even have a shot and score. And it kind of comes down to the fact that I imagine people are going to have a couple of the other options out there, all of whom I think are probably better this week. So it wouldn't surprise me if Haaland got a return here, but whether or not it's a sort of high ceiling Haaland that we've had previously in the year, no, it's not really for me.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I think you'll see it against a lot of times against back threes, that central area will be blue like that, at least in terms of XT and XG. There can be some chance creation from that zone, but usually when it gets closer to the box, it gets a little darker. So, and yeah, the data just doesn't support it. Just doesn't support Haaland as captain at all. So, so I agree. Definitely not top of the list for me either. Let us know in the chat if you're considering Haaland. Hey, haven't seen this person in a while, so throw her up here. Alexia Chilin, talented musician. Check her out. She's got beautiful, beautiful songs and really nice, gorgeous lyrics, I would have to say. So nice to see you, Alexia. All right, cool. Move on to the next matchup. Aston Villa versus Brentford. Aston Villa at home, of course, but much better data. 1.97 net XG compared to Brentford, 1.61. Aston Villa, like, just really strong chance, over 50% chance of two or more goals in this one. They're getting 0.13 XG per shot, which is among the higher ones in the league. And then chance creation from the center and the right. So if you look at the Villa's chance creation from the right matches the expected threat, and that's always like to have that reinforcing data is really nice. So that creativity from the right, and then that deep red XG for Villa down the center is something to note, as Brentford have been vulnerable there. And Brentford, I don't think they'll go to a back four in this one. They'll probably stay in their back five and go to the back four next week. I think they have Sheffield United or something like that next week. From Brentford's perspective, there's not much showing up here. A little bit of XG on that left-hand side, but everything quite muted for Brentford. So, like, those of us that own Tony, like, obviously we can't sell. We own for a reason at this point, right? That's the problem with so many of these players. What do we do? Like, do we play him? Is Muniz a better? I keep going back to Muniz. Is Muniz a better option than Tony? Do we bench Tony? Like, what's his level here?
It's Tony could be so different, right? If we go back to the philosophy at the start, Tony's had so many chances. He's been in all those right positions, and he easily could have come away with multiple attacking returns in the last couple of game weeks. And it does feel like one of those where this is probably the worst game week out of the matchups we've had since I've been on here for Tony. And one where, ironically, maybe he does perform in it. But I do think, again, he's a player who he doesn't tend to stick into just solely that position of operating the central side of things. So I think we can see him looking to move around a bit. And, you know, Villa, they've got McGinn back, haven't they? I think they've got most of their people back. We're waiting for updates on Martinez and Watkins. I think the update was that they're going to wait and see how they are. I don't know anything other than that. So, yeah, they do have a stronger team back. So maybe that will just limit how much of the ball and how many opportunities Brentford get, and whether it will just be on the counter. I'll be starting him, but would I be starting him over a Muniz? I think we'll come on to it, but I really like Fulham this week against Newcastle, so I'd probably be starting a Mooney's.
All right, there's a bunch of questions coming in here, and I will star them. But here's one. This is an interesting one that's pertinent to what we're talking about here. BW Split asks: start Muniz or Douglas Luiz? We'll start Saka. I'll start Saka. So if he doesn't play, both will start anyway. So assuming Saka plays, right? Do you start Muniz or Douglas Luiz? So what do you think about Douglas Luiz in this one?
I like him because he's involved in a lot of things, but I think with McGinn coming back, he'll be probably a bit deeper. McGinn will be playing a bit further up the pitch. Do they have anyone back as far as the defensive midfield side of things, though? Because even then, he has still been pretty progressive, hasn't he? I think even though he's been operating in that deeper role, he still finds his way up the pitch into those spaces. Remember
the first game where Kamara got... He got hurt, right? And then he didn't start that first game. And I think we were on this show saying like Douglas Luiz will be deep. Or no, it was Craig. Or maybe it was Craig. Might have been you. And he played deeper. And he got like two returns and hauled that week. I think in this one, Brentford's kind of weak in an area of the pitch where Douglas Luiz is strong. And it's like in between the back three and the midfield too. You know, in their 3-5-2. So I kind of like Douglas Luiz. And then the other thing is, I mean, there's the idea if Villa's home, play Douglas Luiz, right?
True. So I just really like John McGinn back after a suspension. I feel like I know the question's not John McGinn involved in this scenario. So I think, yeah, I can lean towards it. I think if we're going between those two, I'm still leaning towards Mooney's. But again, I've not seen how your matchups are on that. And I might end up seeing a field of red on that. And we'll revert and sort of change my answer. But yeah, with those points, I can see Douglas Luiz being involved in it. We'll see.
I think, and honestly, like right now, I think I'm with you. I think I prefer Mooney's. I might prefer Mooney's to Tony, and I prefer Tony to Douglas Luiz, I think. Maybe not. Maybe I prefer Douglas Luiz to Tony. I haven't really asked myself that question. Let's move on, and then we can refer back to it as we get to some of these other assets we're considering. This one we'll just go through kind of quickly. Everton hosting Burnley. Everton net XG of 2, Burnley 1.28. Strong green across the board, flank chance creation from the flanks for Everton. That's reinforced by the expected threat and the expected goal maps. It's all blue for the record and for those on podcasts. So it doesn't look good for anybody here. But where it's lighter is on Burnley's flanks. So I don't know. Just like as a token, I'll just throw out like McNeil. Just because. Why not? It's what else are you gonna say? Mikulenko, maybe.
I think we could just say Larsson because he's the in-form player of these two teams. If we wanted to pick
Larsson and Tarkowski for a header, maybe.
I think it's one of those. Just looking at this field of blue, and I've not seen this since I've been on here before. But it kind of seems both these teams are really weak across the field. But also knowing them, they're not exactly great at scoring goals either. So this could be a game where I think I would be tempted to start a defender if I owned one of them from either team. Clean sheets are still hard to come by, right? But I think this is one of those games where either team could get a clean sheet, neither could get a clean sheet, but it's one where I'd probably be more confident than a lot of the other games where you'd have defenders from.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Everton set pieces. So I think that does kind of highlight McNeil a little bit if he's on them. And Tarkowski as a target in the box. The one thing I will say is this game is so important. It's such a massive game that I think is subject to variance and it's very much subject to game state.
Yeah, that's it. It could also be a high scoring one just given how competitive it is because they're both scrapping for their life right now. So yeah, could be anything. And as you said, game state wise, if it's a tight affair in the first half, we can expect the same in the second. If it's open, be a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Might actually be one of the wild card games of the weekend that in the UK people are seeing earlier on Match of the Day than they expect.
Yep. Agreed. Could be. And it's enough time for them for FPL purposes anyway. Fulham hosting Newcastle. Fulham 2.28 net XG, one of the highest of the game week. Look at Newcastle 1.19, deep red, one of the worst of the game week. Newcastle only 9 shots per 90 away, which is not very good, obviously. Bern Leno making a decent impact in goal. The maps don't really agree. The maps show it a little bit differently. The XG map is mostly blue across the board, so kind of agreeing with the poor Newcastle stats, but not agreeing with the good Fulham stats. And then the expected threat map, I'd say there's some red on Newcastle's left. Hello, Anthony Gordon, if that's where he's going to play. He might play on the right. Could be a Harvey Barnes on the left. I think everybody wants to see that. I know I want to see that. Barnes on the left, Gordon on the right, Isak down the middle. I don't know. I guess within the blue in the XG map, it's slightly lighter down the middle. But I think Isak's form kind of maybe trumps some of the data here. But Fulham aren't easy at home. They aren't an easy opponent at home. How do you see this one? Here's the Muniz one.
Yeah, well, it's good to see that blue for Newcastle there for someone like Muniz. And I think Newcastle at the moment, they're just defensively. I can see here we've got sort of a cross next to Hall. We're not sure if he'll start. I think rumours are he'll be part of the group. That doesn't mean much. And that Newcastle back line is just injury galore there. Fulham at home, as you said, are a good team. They're difficult for good teams when they go there. And for games where they actually fancy themselves as being equal to the opposition, they do really let loose and go for it. So for me, one thing that's jumping out here, I can see sort of on the shot-based goal predictor here, that sort of 3+, and as you said, the net XG 2.28. It wouldn't surprise me if this was a game where Fulham dominated. And we've seen them scoring a lot of goals off late. So I think they do need to make sure they tighten up once they go ahead. But it wouldn't surprise me if they got another 3 goals in this game. I'd still expect Newcastle to score because that front three is exciting. And Bruno Guimarães is doing incredible at the moment. I think he's still close to a suspension, but managed to avoid a yellow card in sort of over 10 games. Been treading that tightrope for a long, long time. So fair play to him for doing that job. So, this game could go either way, but I do think it's definitely a game where we'll see quite a few goals in it this week.
Yeah, Colm, this is Colm's game. He says he has a bad feeling Dan Burn will score against his old team again. Go ahead.
So I was going to say, Fulham, particularly at home, they concede a lot of shots against themselves, but not really sort of high XG ones whatsoever. And goalkeeper-wise, they tend to come out on top in it. So I think there will be a lot of chances from Newcastle. And I think it will be a game where we've seen Barnes and Gordon in sort of recent games with the long-range shooting. So I think it will be a game with a lot of long-range shooting from them. But I think set piece-wise, Dan Burn scoring a goal, it's unlikely to come from that set piece. I think Fulham might have that upper hand on set pieces and could well do sort of get an attacking return themselves from a corner.
Yeah, so you're right. Fulham only, they concede 15.5 shots per 90 at home, which is like in the top third best. Worst, right? It's a lot of shots, and so it's in the bottom third. But they're only 0.1 XG. But I think if you concede that many shots to Newcastle, they will punish you. Yeah. So then I'm just realizing, so if Isak, so who are you playing from here? I would play Isak, Muniz, Gordon as a start. You just start your attackers?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. I still have a Iwobi lingering around in my team from not free hitting when everyone else did. So he's currently my 8th attacker and on the bench, but I wouldn't hate even starting him or a Willian or a Pereira in this game. Not over some of the other players we've sort of discussed earlier on this, where we'd be starting Muniz over them. I think I'd start all of them over sort of a Fulham midfielder. But yeah, I think my Newcastle attackers, if you went for a Harvey Barnes last week as a bit of a punt, I'd definitely be looking at starting him again, particularly with that Almiron news of him being out. You know, you've still got him and it's a good fixture.
But Iwobi was one of the three Stooges who got yanked in the 33rd minute by Milwood, right? So I don't know about. I was shocked because he's been such a leader for them all season, but I didn't watch the game, so I don't know. I can't say whether it was deserved or not. Cool. Next fixture, Luton hosting Bournemouth. Luton 1.93 net XG, which is quite high here. Bournemouth 1.71. In terms of stats standing out here, Bournemouth left side's chance creation, flank XT from the flanks for Bournemouth, maybe from the flanks for Luton, but it's not red. It's more neutral zone compared to the blue in the center. And then the XG map is deep red on the left and center for Bournemouth and pink on the right, whereas it's all kind of blue for Luton here. How are you seeing this? I mean, obviously, like, your Bournemouth attackers, you play them. How are you seeing players like Doughty? And how do you see kind of like Semenyo versus Solanke here?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we've just come off the back of the 7-goal thriller that they had against each other, where Semenyo came out on top and kind of really took advantage of that wide right area. But at the same time, Solanke was still heavily involved in it. It just was one of those games where Semenyo, in the last, I think it was sort of in the final 30 minutes, really came to life and exploited them as they got tired. Again, I expect it to be another open game because you've got Luton who are fighting for survival, who, whether they go a goal up or whether they're sort of a couple of goals down, they continue to push forward. And even against Arsenal, I'd mentioned it on the last one that I didn't expect Arsenal to keep a clean sheet. I thought that there'd be moments of losing concentration throughout and that they'd punish us. And there were moments where we lost concentration. And thankfully, they didn't punish us on those occasions. But I do think Luton are a team that are going to continue to push forward at every opportunity. And being at home will be more attacking. So that will enable people like Semenyo, like Tavernier and Solanke all on the break to have a lot of chances. And I do think they'll have a lot of the ball as well. I'd be happy whether I've got Solanke or Semenyo to start either one of them. If I had to pick between the two of them, I'm probably going Solanke this time round. I know Semenyo won the battle last time, but something just tells me that Solanke might just... I know it's up against sort of the potentially a back five, but I think with the way that Bournemouth attacks, Semenyo does kind of operate as that second striker, so I think it would well be off of one of a Semenyo attacking, cutting the ball back to him rather than anything else. But I am expecting another sort of open, free, high-scoring game between two teams just really going for it and not really thinking too much about defence.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, except I prefer Semenyo to Solanke. But I get your point as well, because Solanke does move between the lines. So if he's going to be moving that way, sometimes he'll just drift, right? He won't just stay as a target nine sometimes. So especially if he's doing that, there could be chances for him. But prefer Semenyo. But actually, like I would like a Ouattara, for example, if he played on that left hand side. Tavernier, whoever's penetrating from the left hand side, I think could get something. Now the problem is, I think Bournemouth penetrate more from the right. So I'm not sure who that would be. But just as a differential or a fantasy challenge play, they may be like a Ouattara or something like that could be a consideration. Or if Kirkus looks to get a start, if you see Kirkus is starting, he could be a good option. What's the challenge for fantasy challenge this week? Do you know?
It's Liverpool and Man United players get double for the derby. So probably fielding up on a lot of Liverpool and Man United attacks, I think, for most people. Although one question on this rather than on the challenge, a lot of people still own Alfie Doughty. Are you starting him in this game? Are you thinking he's got that upside of the attack and return?
Yes, and at home, but who would you start him ahead of? Right? Yeah, like I wouldn't start him ahead of Gabriel, right? I wouldn't start him ahead of Ait Nouri. I wouldn't start him ahead of Gusto. Who else? I probably wouldn't start him ahead of Porro.
Yeah, no, most people will have those other options, won't they? I guess it's one of those, if you've got an Aston Villa defender, maybe you're starting him over them. But I guess it's for those people where, through necessity, if you've got a Lascelles and another one who's potentially suspended or injured, it's not the end of the world to be starting a Doughty in this game.
Cool. Let's move to the next fixture. Wolves versus West Ham. Wolves 1.98 net XG, West Ham 1.47. Wolves chance creation mostly from the left. No surprise there. Aiton Nouri tearing it up on that side. If we're looking at the maps, we're looking at the expected threat map. On Wolves' left-hand side is it's like a light pink. And on the right is a little bit even lighter. But it's kind of like that deep blue down the center for both sides, for West Ham and Wolves, with some relief on the flanks for both of them as well. Now, the XG one's interesting because it's all blue for Wolves, and the right side line lights up for West Ham with some kind of indication that Bowen could be a good option against Wolves. Like, if Wolves are going to push forward from that side, although Aiton Nouri is not the wing, he didn't play wing back last game. He played a full on left wing, so he wouldn't be the one pushing forward. Who do you like in this game and why?
Yeah, I think I've already gone early and bought Aiton Nouri in because I wish I had last week, to be honest. And the fixture is still good for him, and he does have that double coming up. And I think it's similar players that we were discussing last week. I don't think there's anyone particularly new that comes out or jumps out from either of these teams. I think we saw Sarabi is still involved in set pieces, and he'll be pretty much involved in a lot of the good stuff that Wolves do. So he's a good asset if you have him, particularly at that sort of 4.7 price point. Bowen, yeah, I'd still be holding on to a Bowen. Although I have seen some people looking to get maybe a Palmer or a Foden in, and one of the routes of doing that is sacrificing a Bowen. And I can see the merit behind that, but at the same time, looking at that XG difference and that right-hand side lighting up for him, it could be a good game. But as you said, we just don't know who's playing on that side. And if Aiton Nouri continues to just be that winger, you've almost got him being able to double up and help that fullback as they need to sort of monitor Bowen. So, yeah, probably leaning more towards Wolves players than West Ham players in this game. Aiton Nouri is just a standout starter.
Yeah, Aiton Nouri is becoming quite obvious. I don't know, selling Bowen could come back to bite you in this fixture, but it still feels like a good long-term move.
Yeah.
And it also depends on the type of player that you are. Like, is so the question, I guess, if we go back to the philosophy, the question is Bowen a problem? It's not really a problem. Like, if you bought him, you're getting what you expected, kind of. So I guess there's no reason to sell. I would sell because I can't stand owning any West Ham players. But yeah. So that would be a different reason. Brighton versus Arsenal. Brighton 1.15 net XG, Arsenal 1.7. Let's see, chance creation, maybe some slight preference for Arsenal from the right. Pretty even for Brighton. Expected threat map, deep red for Arsenal on the left. Light red, like a pale red for Arsenal on the right. Expected goals map, even deeper red for Arsenal on the left. Light red again on the right. This one's all you. Take us through this one, Kieran.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Brighton are a difficult team, particularly with the way De Zerbi sets up. So I think he will be looking to accept that Arsenal are going to have a lot of possession here. Even though Brighton are at home, they're going to be accepting that and looking to hit Arsenal on the break. And I think a lot of that and their success on it will depend on who Arsenal start in that defensive midfield role. I think we probably are going back to seeing Rice plus a Jorginho or Partey. So he'll be back in there. But that's probably going to be because we are aware of that pace that Brighton offer on the break. And whether it's an Nciso, whether it's a Dingra or whoever it may be, sort of as one of their fast attackers, you do need that additional support there, because the Arsenal fullbacks will be pushing forward with us just holding a lot of the ball. I think it's one of those games where I'd still expect Odegaard to be heavily involved in dictating a lot of the play. And, you know, looking at sort of the matchups, the central position itself isn't going to be necessarily the key place where we're getting the goals from. But I think it will be the place where a lot of those chances will be created from, with that pass in between the defensive lines. And that will be what Arsenal are going to be looking for a lot of. There'll be a lot of overlapping fullback runs as well. And if it's a Kivior who starts, I think he'll be sort of moving inside quite frequently. That's one of his favourite things to do, is sort of get inside and get a shot away himself. So it'll be a game that you'd expect Arsenal to have a lot of the ball, to have a lot of shots, and for Brighton to kind of look to hit them on the break. So I own Odegaard. I'd be happy to continue to start him. I was looking at bringing in an additional Arsenal attacker this week. I still can't, because I'm not entirely sure if Saka's 100% fit, or whether there's something else going on there, or whether they do want to rest him until the Bayern game. But I would expect this to be... It depends on the game state and whether Brighton can get one of those counter-attacks and get one of those goals. But if Arsenal can get an early goal, I think they'll just have a pretty professional performance in there, and maybe sort of a 2-0 game, and keep it concise like they did against Luton.
Is selling Saka for another Arsenal mid sideways, given the injury doubt?
I still wouldn't do it.
No?
No, I just... It depends on what you're doing in sort of... Particularly 34, but you're going to want him for 34, definitely. So if you're free hitting for 34, fine. But I wouldn't necessarily move to an Arsenal midfielder if I was moving off of him. So I think it would be one where... I think he does start in this game, and I think it's one of the ones where he does get minutes under his belt. Purely because Reece Nelson's fine, but that was his first start since COVID. Last time he actually started an Arsenal game in the Premier League was literally during the COVID period. So you kind of can't expect him to be getting two in a row. In the same way that Saka needs a rest, you can't suddenly throw someone like a Reece Nelson back-to-back games in sort of a short period of time. And there are other options that can be there, or Martinelli can start there. But it's the same as like a Palmer, as a Foden. Yes, there'll be a couple of games where they'll be benched or where they sort of have that dip. But fundamentally, Saka is that key man for Arsenal. And as we're getting towards the tail end of the season, where Arsenal, Liverpool, City are all pushing for it, you want their best players in your team. And if you've got them already, you don't want to sort of be moving them out at any point.
Claire comes in with a question, kind of on the piggyback of that. Saka, worth moving him out for Odegaard, or just bench him and roll one free transfer to have two free transfers in 33? Or play him? She's assuming, like, bench him. She's assuming he's injured, but should she play? Should everybody start Saka?
I would if I had him.
Yeah.
If I had him, I'd be starting him.
And you don't have him.
No. So I had to bring an Arsenal player in for last week. And just with the doubt, I went for Odegaard instead. So I was fortunate from that regard. But my plan was actually to have the second one in coming in for this game week. And instead I'm holding off on making that move because of the lack of knowledge, but the fact that Arsenal have they would have had training earlier on today, so we won't know anything about it necessarily, but my gut's telling me that I'd expect him to start, because we won't want to be going into Bayern Munich without any minutes into his leg. And if it's just been sort of a rest, if it is something more serious, then he won't be playing whatsoever. But if I owned him, I'd definitely be starting him for that basis.
And is it who starts at the 9 and at the 11? Does Martinelli start? Jesus this time? Or Havertz?
I think Martinelli starts on the left. And it's interesting. It depends on who he's looking to start in that home tie against Bayern Munich. I think he'll probably start Kai Havertz in that game, just in terms of how that game matchup would be. Because I think sort of Jesus is probably more, if we were away for the first leg, it'd be more of a Jesus game to try and hold that ball up. But I think in the home one, we will be looking to utilize Kai more. So
I think maybe familiarity as well
with
the Bundesliga.
Yeah. So it'll be, yeah, it then weighs into, does that then mean you want Kai to get some minutes in his legs and sub him off? Or does that mean you want to give him that rest in between it? I would steer more towards sort of Arteta resting him and giving Gabriel Jesus the run out. So, you know, I'd probably go 65% expecting Gabby to lead the line.
If it's Gabby and Martinelli, I'd say watch that combination in this one. I think they could really hurt Brighton on that on that left hand side. Cool. Let's see. So yeah, questions are coming in. I am starring them. We'll get to them at the end. Thank you for all the questions. Don't forget to hit that like. We got 37 of the people in the chat now. Kieran, so that's good. Fantasy Manager Weekly is also joining. Just joined us. Yeah, good chat, everyone. Let me take Claire's and we'll get to the next fixture here. We're making great time, so I think we are going to have a decent amount of time for questions at the end. Then it'll be a kind of hard stop for me because I have to go get the kids at school, and it's always fun picking the kids up at school. Sorry for the tangent on Fridays, because you know the school kid Friday vibe. I live that every Friday when I'm with the kids and I pick them up, and it's just like, oh yeah, like embracing that Friday coming in. So I'm looking forward to that. But let's get to kind of the marquee fixture for the game week. Manchester United hosting Liverpool. Not what we wanted to see in terms of the data. It's nothing spectacular to say the least. Manchester United 1.25 net XG, Liverpool 1.67 predicted net XG. Liverpool chance creation kind of showing up on the left, I guess a little bit more than the center, which is a little bit more than the right. It's not that much, I guess. So, but it is confirmed with the XT on that left hand side. It is the deepest red. It's not super deep, but it's just like a medium red, I guess. And then that's also confirmed with the XG on that left hand side for Liverpool. So as we're all, like myself included, but looking to Salah, the data is suggesting the left rather than the right. But I think injuries will play a big role in this one with a Manchester United back line that's just completely decimated. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about the Liverpool assets here? I want to hear your thoughts specifically on, I mean, Salah, of course, but specifically on Liverpool's midfield up against United's midfield.
Yeah, it depends if Endo is back fit. I expect he will be in there, but McAllister did a good job in the last game of sort of holding in that deeper position and still managing to impact the attack. And look, you're going to have a lot more freedom against the Sheffield United than you are Man United. Although saying that, it's questionable who the worst defence is right now. In terms of it, I just think that midfield three that Liverpool have right now is so strong. I think the sort of the individual qualities of each of them complement the overarching way that the team operates. So I think, you know, they've got the ability to press players, put them under pressure, to close down the spaces, to find the passes themselves, and to move the ball side to side. And I think it's really impressive what Klopp's done of sort of bringing in three players and really overturning an aging midfield so quickly. So I do think this is a game where Liverpool have the upper hand in that midfield. And I expect Man United will be sitting a bit deeper with the knowledge that they do have a weaker back line there that they do need to be protecting. So that could stifle a Bruno in terms of how attacking he can be in that outlook. He'll still be looking to make those breakaway passes like he did against Chelsea and then go to support it. But the thing that I heard someone else mention it, and I can't remember who, but Man United, the last two games, they conceded 28 shots to Chelsea, 31 to Brentford. And actually, if we continue back beyond that, 23 to Everton, 27 to City, and 17 to Fulham. So in all bar one of those competitions, so Fulham was the only team they actually managed to outshoot. And you've got teams like Everton and Brentford in there as well. And we sort of went through Brentford and how uninspiring they are as a team. And they managed to sort of run riot over Man United and have that many chances. And I think if you afford that number of chances to a team like Liverpool, to a Mo Salah, to a Diaz, you're in for trouble. And I think in a game like this, that is going to create opportunities for whether it's a Szoboszlai, whether it's McAllister. But I do expect that sort of central midfielders to be heavily involved in it as well. and it wouldn't surprise me. I said it on the last one. I really like McAllister, and he's starting to become a real option for FPL, particularly with that double game week coming up. I think we're still sleeping on him, but week in, week out, he's either getting a goal or an assist. And as they get into the crunch end of the season, that's what Liverpool players start to do.
He's on the prowl around the edge of the box. And you've been mentioning that, just like that there's something's different. McAllister is different. You mentioned that several weeks ago. And I think that like shots, like he scored a worldie, right? But I think that's the result of being on the prowl. That's the result of a different type of McAllister kind of showing up in these games. So I'm with you on that as well, as an interesting differential here. And I'm kind of with the data and the maps kind of favoring Liverpool's left-hand side. Wan-Bissaka will be on that. Will be marking Salah, playing on his wrong side, but Wan-Bissaka's right footed. Salah will want to come cut inside, so that kind of suits him as well. And that makes the matchup a little trickier for Salah. But the thing is, the problem, and I think the upside with Salah here is Wan-Bissaka's newcomer for support on the inside at left center back. Unless I guess Maguire would play the left center back. And what's his name? The other guy? It's long.
Let me look it up. Yeah, I hadn't heard of him before he came onto the pitch yesterday. And I know that Ryan's quite small there as well. So let's see if we can get close with a bit. Larger writing. Kambwala. Willie Kambwala.
Kambwala.
Yeah.
Chelsea. Okay. So yeah, his inexperience, he might not know the kind of support Wan-Bissaka needs when up against Salah, and his inexperience could actually open things up for Szoboszlai as well.
It looks like when he came on, he did play that right center back role in the last game. So he may well be that. Yeah.
Okay. So if he does play the right center back role, again, adding to the McAllister. I was going to say Szoboszlai if he was going to play on the left, but I think if he plays the right, McAllister and Luis Diaz bring in the South American connection there up against Dalot and newcomer.
Interestingly, it looks like in the last game, Dalot and Wan-Bissaka were on the opposite sides to each other, looking at the heat maps against Chelsea. So it looks like Dalot played left and Wan-Bissaka played right.
Really interesting. So... one thing we've neglected, we've gotten like almost a whole show, we haven't mentioned that all of our predicted 11s that we're showing here and all of the expected threat maps and the XG maps, they're all from @DraftAlchemy. He's Hogan in the Discord chat. So drop him a hello, drop him a thank you. I think he is dropping these in the weekly metrics in Discord as well. If you want to check those out, just get in there and get into that. Is it called the channel, a room? I don't know. Find it. Click on where it says weekly metrics and whatever that's called. That's where you go. And if you can't get there, it's because you're not subscribed. So just subscribe to NetThatHall. Welcome to the family and come check it out. So thank you, Hogan, for all of this. And he came up with these predicted 11s. He has Dalot on the right and Wan-Bissaka. And I don't know that this for this one, it makes sense.
He's right for every game, apart from it looks like that Chelsea Man United game. So I was clicking through a few of the other ones there, and that is the positions they were playing. So it looked like maybe it was a tactic to try and monitor Cole Palmer, in which case probably didn't work that well.
You'd want Wan-Bissaka on Cole Palmer, right?
Yeah. So not sure, but yeah, I sort of loaded up the heat maps, and it does correlate with Wan-Bissaka being on the right and Dalot on the left. But yeah, I'd expect it probably to revert back more to this and probably see Maguire alongside him. I think this is the one where, because it is the FPL challenging where you're getting double points for them, from your perspective, how many attackers would you be starting in challenge from Man United and Liverpool?
I don't know if I start any. So any Manchester United attackers? Maybe Hoyland, maybe. But I don't want Bruno operating in midfield against Liverpool's midfield. I don't want Anthony, despite him finally doing something good. I don't want the disaster that is Garnacho. And he could get something. I'm not saying he's chaos. And I'm not going to put my money on chaos. So I don't know. I would be all Liverpool here. I mean, Diaz, so in challenge, Diaz maybe with the captaincy, McAllister, Salah, like I'd go all the Liverpool guys. How about you?
Yeah, I think the same. I'm looking at mine at the moment and I've got, I don't know why, but I've got Onana, probably because I've just left him on there where I'll watch and see what he does. Because I've got Petrovic as that second one who plays later. So start Petrovic. And if Onana somehow pulls out a worldie, I'll switch Petrovic to Peter Cech or someone else, legacy, who doesn't play. I've got Salah, Diaz, Garnacho's in there and McAllister's in there. And then I've got Virgil and Dallo in there. But just, I think I was just spamming as many of them as I can in there where I don't see too many clean sheets, and 2 points is slightly more than 1 point, and four is slightly more than two. So if you can double of it, then why not go for it? But yeah, I think there'll be a few tweaking. I'd agree with you. I think nothing wrong with having three or four Liverpool attackers in if you're getting double points for them.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I think we got a couple more fixtures to go. So we'll get through them quickly and try to get out of here in about 20 minutes or so if we can. Sheffield hosting Chelsea. Sheffield 1.62 net XG, indicating potentially a goal here. Chelsea 2.36 net XG. This is weird. I hadn't noticed this. Shots per 90 at home. Sheffield United 12.8. Chelsea away 12. Fewer shots per 90 than Sheffield United. At least predicted based on the stats so far. Predicted in this one, kind of hinting that NetXG would certainly likes Cole Palmer potentially as a captaincy here, but some of the other data maybe doesn't like Cole Palmer as an option or as a captain. Sorry, expected threat map, deep red on the left, also deep red but a little bit lighter on the right for Chelsea, and then the XG map, it's all blue everywhere except neutral, a white neutral in the central and right zones for Chelsea. Is basically, I mean, there aren't many questions, I think, for owners here. The main one is Cole Palmer a captain consideration for you? Kind of where does he land?
He's definitely a consideration. I think it's hard not to because he is operating in the space at Sheffield United, the most vulnerable. You know, you'd expect Nicholas Jackson to be occupying their centre-backs and really keeping folks around that. And I expect if it is a Gallagher or whoever it may be playing that 10 role to be heavily involved as well, because Sheffield United, game after game, show that their weakness is if you overload them down the wing and then cut the ball back to the supporting midfielders, because they will obsess on trying to monitor that front three and overload defending them. So it should be a good game for Cole Palmer. Whether or not it's as good as people are hoping for, I'm not so sure. I have him as the second best captain option to this choice because I am just sort of higher on Salah purely because I think Man United are displaying worse defensive qualities than Sheffield United are at the moment. And, you know, Liverpool are looking to get revenge over being knocked out of the FA Cup by them as well. Whilst also going on to try and win the title. So, yeah, Cole Palmer should go well in it. I don't blame people for captaining him. I think it is a close call between the two of them. And I think it should be a game that Chelsea go well. I do see a Sheffield United goal in this one because they are looking more and more attacking. And I think teams that are essentially relegated at this stage of the season play with a lot more freedom and they've got nothing to lose. So they will be more attacking. And we saw it in the last game against Liverpool, how high they were pressing them, particularly when it was 1-1. They continued to press and try and get that second goal. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the same here. And that will play into Chelsea's hands and into Cole Palmer's hands in particular.
I don't know if Wilder is going to be that naive. I don't think he does the same thing against Liverpool as he, to Chelsea as he did against Liverpool, especially knowing that that Chelsea can't break down a deep block. Those of you that know, Gian Batra wrote a really nice analysis about this kind of idea. He's a Chelsea fan, and he was considering Cole Palmer as a captain. And he wrote down that that at home, Sheffield United may not, they don't have to go after it. They don't have to press Chelsea, because that's not how you disrupt them. Chelsea will get frustrated if they can't execute. And so they could be frustrated here. And he expects Sheffield United to sit deep. And I think I agree with that perspective. So that and the fact that, yeah, I mean, Cole Palmer's in a great spot. That there's no doubt about it. And I think he's probably equal. It's like a toss of a coin for me between him and Salah, precisely because he's in all the right areas, the pens and everything. But I think there could be an opportunity here if Gian's right. What do you think about Gian's perspective?
Yeah, he'll know Chelsea better than most people from sort of a tactical perspective in terms of being able to analyse them and where they do struggle. But at the same time, I think Chelsea have been pretty good recently in terms of that progression. I think they do still have those laps. I don't think it's necessarily whether or not they'll get frustrated. I think whether or not you're just looking at a careless pass or a lazy pass from a Caicedo or an Enzo at this stage, more so because I think, you know, that attacking three, whether it's a Mudryk, I think Mudryk, Sterling, Madueke, that they're all rotating with each other, all playing for that position. So I think all of them are still creating quite a lot there. I think this is one of the games where I do think Chelsea probably get an earlier goal. I think if they don't, then they will get frustrated, and I think that's where Sheffield United will happily sit back. But I think if they get that early goal, potentially that's where it's going to be more open. And I think Chelsea recently have shown a tendency to start really fast and try and go at teams pretty quickly to put them on the back foot and almost make a statement so they can then try and control that game. And it will just be a question as to whether or not they can break down that. Like you said, Wilder will definitely do a low block to start with. He'll have sort of eight of them behind. Well, no, he'll have 10 of them behind the ball. Maybe one of them just hanging sort of slightly there, chasing the ball down and putting pressure on the players. And it will just come down to how early Chelsea are able to break that down or whether they get frustrated. Either way, as you said, Cole Palmer will still be, if Chelsea score, Cole Palmer will be involved. And it's that simple. And we'll still expect Chelsea to probably get a couple of goals in this game. So he's definitely a reasonable captaincy choice off that basis.
Yeah, I totally agree. Very high floor. All right, we're moving on to the last fixture of the game week. Before we do, just a little message from Ballroom Jam. P.S. Smash that like, folks. Haven't asked yet, so smash that like. 50 people in the chat now. We got 50 viewers. Hollers, hopefully, will hit that like for us. And we'll get right to Spurs versus Nottingham Forest. Tottenham 1.86 net XG, Forest 1.36. Spurs with a 58% chance of two or more goals. Really robust there. Look at both Spurs and Forest, 0.15 XG per shot. That's the highest. Nottingham Forest is away data. Spurs is home data, of course. But the zonals, the chance creation zonals, aren't really there for Spurs, which is an interesting wrinkle in the data here, especially looking at the expected threat. It's just deep red on the flanks and then a deep blue all for Nottingham Forest across the board. Lastly, the expected goals map there. It's like a medium red for Spurs on the from the left-hand side, and a light blue, kind of like a neutral to poor matchup in the center and on the right. I guess I want to ask you how you see Spurs' front three. Draft Alchemy has him here. Son down the middle, Werner on the left, Kulusevski, right? He's got Kulusevski there on the right hand side. I think Brennan Johnson continues to play. But I think Kulusevski is a problem. I've been saying it for a long time. It just Kulusevski slows the play down every single time, and Ange wants to play pretty quickly through the spaces. So it's just a bad fit. And I'd like to get your thoughts on Madison a little bit, as he's not really he's not dictating tempo in the game like he was at the beginning of the season, right? He wasn't dictating the flow and the progression. So what are your thoughts on Spurs here? And are the defenders, are we starting Borro?
Yeah, so I guess starting with Maddison, I'd agree with you. Since he's returned from injury, he doesn't look like he's the same player. He looks slower. He looks to be playing more sideways and backwards passes than he was in terms of looking to move the ball forwards. And I wonder whether or not the answer right now is moving Kulu into that position so Brennan Johnson can play it out wide. And I know you're not the biggest fan of Kulusevski, but actually when he's been coming onto the pitch, it has been for Maddison, and it has had a significant impact on the way that Spurs are attacking. He is moving that ball quicker. He is looking for the passes more. And potentially it is because maybe that right wing position is not suited to him and how he operates. Maybe he is more akin to it. Maybe not a 10, maybe sort of a slightly deeper one. But the only way it works in a 9 system is if he's moving in for Maddison. I think it's a tough game just in general for Spurs. I think Nottingham Forest will make Spurs have to defend. They will be pushing forward with the pace that they've got of Callum Hudson-Odoi, Elanga, Morgan Gibbs-White. They'll continue to be pushing forward. And I think from set pieces, they offer a serious threat to Spurs, who haven't looked the most convincing at times from a defensive standpoint. So it's one where I'll expect, from an attacking perspective, Porro and Udogi to actually be heavily involved in it from Spurs. And I could see them sort of in that final third more frequently than they're in their own defensive half. And could get an attacking return off the base of it. But I tend to agree with the NetXG here, where I think it's sort of a 2-1 either way type of game. With Spurs being at home, I'd expect them probably to get the edge there. I don't know. Do we know if Richarlison's close back to fitness? Because that left-hand side does look good. And if Son was operating off of it, I'd really like him this game week. But in that central position, I just don't really fancy Son in a game like this against Nottingham Forest. Well, I like him, but not necessarily as a captaincy.
Right. It's limited. BW Split is asking, Johnson has questionable fitness. I haven't looked into that, but we'll check it out right now, BW. You know what's interesting here? I was looking at some stats. The second most. So Forest have the second most big chances away in the last six. In the last six away, 17. If Forest are going to generate multiple big chances here, Spurs are going to concede. Spurs will probably concede anyway without the big chances. If the XG per shot and the shots per 90 are to be believed, 0.15 XG per shot, and let's just say 12 shots, I think Forest score. So I don't really like Spurs defense here. And I find that attacking returns from them is so unpredictable. They are bombing forward, getting into those half spaces, but from there, it doesn't go anywhere. And I don't know if it's because of injuries. Because of Madison's form coming back from injury or what. But I will say, from having Son, I do feel confident that he'd get something here at home. And Madison does play better at home, or he did before he got hurt. So that could be something. If it were me, I would probably be selling Madison for someone else. So I do agree with that. Okay.
I was just having a quick look there while you were doing that. Apparently, the last news was on April the 2nd, so a few days ago, on Brennan Johnson was from Ange. Yeah, I think he's all right. It was just a knock from a set piece. I think everyone got through it pretty well, considering it was two games in a short space of time.
Okay, good.
And it looks like Richarlison's still out. The update on him was he's had a bit of a niggle with his knee, so we'll probably give him this weekend off. Hopefully he'll be back for Newcastle, so we would expect Son to stay through the middle.
And like we said, that's not the area where we want him necessarily in this one, according to the data anyway. according to the data. So yeah, so just that I think cast some doubt on his captaincy a little bit. All right, get your questions in. We are getting to that time of the show. We're gonna take the questions. I don't think we have any questions from Discord, so the questions here from the chat will be the questions, and we'll probably try to go for another 10 to 15 minutes here. Here up on the screen is the Game Week 32, just kind of review slide. Things that stand out at on the top end, Chelsea with the highest net XG at 2.36, followed by Fulham 2.28. Then we have Everton at 2 and Wolves at 1.98 and Villa. It's so funny, like all the highest teams, and I wrote this in the Discord too. It's all teams that we don't really have many players from. Chelsea, you don't have much more than Palmer in terms of attackers, right? And the rest. So it is a little bit of an awkward game week from a stats perspective. And then on the defensive side, you know, like every game week, not predicting many clean sheets. 1.15 is the lowest net XG. That's for Brighton, home to Arsenal. Newcastle is next, which is really interesting. Away to Fulham, Newcastle 1.19. Then it jumps a little bit to 1.28 for Burnley. But it's interesting that Brighton and Newcastle are both at the bottom. What stands out to you here really quickly, Kieran, before we get to the questions?
It was that, actually. It was a Newcastle one there. And I think actually it's Man United who are third on 1.25, which is, you wouldn't have said Brighton, Newcastle, Man United as the lowest scoring teams this game week from the prediction. So that definitely jumps out to me. I think outside of that, nothing major. I think a lot of it we've covered off as we've gone through there, looking at the zonals, that Bournemouth left-hand side, as we said, but no one really is owning a Tavernier or anyone there. So I said it'll be sort of, is it a Kirkes? Is it a new Atara? If you own a Kirkes, you start him this game week. I own him, so I probably will start him and hope for the best. But yeah, I think we've covered the majority of it off. There's nothing too surprising outside of the things you mentioned at the start.
Right on. Okay. Let's get to some questions here. And there are some comments in there that you guys have posted that I'll get to as well. Looking at you, Maddie, FPL Maddie Winslow. You got some good comments there that would be good for discussion. First question, FPL K9. Guys, I need to get rid of Madison to facilitate Haaland next week. Should I give him this week or just bring Sarabia in now or complicate matters and transfer out Saka to Foden? Why not just do Madison to Foden?
Because I think he needs the money for Haaland.
Oh, you're so right. Madison,
you need Sarabia would be a decrease, right. And Saka to Foden is a slight decrease, isn't it? Not much. So I don't know whether or not you're then getting Foden to cover off Haaland instead. In which case, I personally don't necessarily hate that. You know, I wouldn't be rushing to bring Haaland in for a game against Luton next week, in between Bayern Munich games, followed by a FA Cup game. I'm not saying he's bad, but as in, I wouldn't necessarily be rushing to get him in and doing that. But then again, I wouldn't necessarily be doing Saka to Foden. So yeah, if you can do Madison to Foden, then I'd be looking to do that instead. I imagine you can't, but yeah, I'm not sure. I don't like Madison this week, to be honest. I don't see any issues with switching him out for someone like Sarabia. I'm sure there's probably slightly better options in terms of the next couple of weeks. But he's not the worst one, given he does have that double in 34 if you're not free hitting.
Yeah, he's a fine enabler, 4.7 million. It's hard to beat at that price. So, and I don't think there's much of a drop in terms for this week going Madison to Sarabia or something like that. It could be pretty similar. Good luck with that. K9 comes in again. Start Solanke, Muniz, and Isak, or bench Solanke for Sarabia if brought in for Mato. That kind of changes things, doesn't it? If that's the case, why not start the three of them and just bench Mato and roll the transfer?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You've then got more info, right, and you can use sort of two transfers to get Haaland in if you still want him next week.
Yeah, then the question becomes start Madison or bench one, Madison, Solanke, Muniz.
Madison.
Yep. Cool. Tom White, Doughty ahead of Zabarni?
Yeah. Nah. I said yeah, and then I was sort of immediately kind of backtracked on it.
My gut says
upside, yeah. I'm not expecting either to get a clean sheet. And Zavani's literally had like, I said that he hadn't managed a single shot on target, and then he scored with his second shot on target. Lightning may strike twice, but go with the odds of the upside with Doughty.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Tom White. Peter, FPL team. If you're not using FPL team, it's like it's like doing carpentry without a tool, or just something without a tool. Use the good tools. It's a hashtag evolution. Who scores more, Muniz or Haaland? Legit question.
In general, over a season, or are we going this week?
I think this game week.
I know, yeah. And I will. I'll echo your thoughts on FPL team. I actually found out today, and apologies for not knowing this sooner, Pete, but that you can remove teams from your fixture planning schedule thing on the bottom. So you can just completely remove them and just have like four or five that you want to focus on, which definitely helps out instead of getting lost with loads of fixtures to scan through. I reckon this week it's Muniz. I think, you know, we saw on the goal predictor that sort of Fulham are one of the top teams. I think they get three goals this week. And I think if they get three, then he's probably involved in two of them. I think City may get three, but I think there is a chance that you could kind of take a Haaland off early if you wanted to. But I do think that Palace game is going to be tougher for them, weirdly, than Newcastle will be for Fulham. So I'd probably start Muniz.
Also away. Palace, you know, the Palace game is away. Muniz is home. And yeah, potentially limited minutes for Haaland with Madrid midweek. So I like that shout. Jake Durham asks, best Trippier replacement that isn't Aitnori, VVD, or Gabriel?
It depends on what you need them for at this point, right? Like, are we talking a one-week punt? Or are we talking someone that you are looking to have in 34 and you're saying not Aitnori because you already have them? Because I guess that's where the kind of difficulty is. I think if we're looking at it from a defensive perspective this week, you're kind of looking at Everton maybe as the best defence. So maybe a Tarkowski. But that's horrendous to say for like Trippier. If you are looking for someone in that 34, they also have a double, right? Yes, it's Forest and Liverpool, but there is Forest in there. I don't think there's any good defenders, really. I think Aitnori is a standout option. And I think after that, you're kind of maybe a Liverpool defender. Maybe you are, if you don't have, forgotten his name now, Bradley. If you don't have Conor Bradley, then yeah, he's probably the next best.
But it depends on what you need him for, because he, you know, he'll be back soon and so he won't be seeing more. I mean, I guess within that, it depends. This week, Gusto against Sheffield United. Why not? Attacking defender against Sheffield United, almost free, right? And then but you know, he in 34, he has Arsenal away, single game week Arsenal away, right? So it depends what you're doing for 34. You could bench him in 34. And then another option would be Munoz at Palace. Not for this week, obviously. But if you have two free transfers, maybe bring Munoz in, and then you're saving Munoz for 34 with the double. So there's a couple for you.
He's a 34 only, isn't he, Munoz? Where like next week it's Liverpool. So you're kind of going, oh, great. Not anytime soon. But yeah, if you've got that free transfer, he'd probably be my favorite.
Yeah, so there's one 34 only, and there's one not for 34. So it depends on which way you're going. Thingamabob. Hello, chaps. Just a question for later. Is Solanke captain absolutely bonkers? I say yes. Totally, absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's even for me, it's slightly too far.
Even for the world of Kieran.
And look, I captained Cameron Archer twice this season. So yeah, if I'm saying it's a little bit crazy. So,
there you go. There's some context for that answer. Okay.
I imagine you've got better options. Just start Solanke and be happy with the goal.
Yeah. Jake threw him back in. Nunez to Haaland or Jackson to Hall? Should he bring Haaland in or Jackson?
Can I keep Nunez?
Which one of those three Halls this week? Which one scores the most? Let's do that.
Which one scores the most this week? Nunez.
Okay. I'll say Haaland. FPL Maddie Winslow. Hi lads. I think Foden is too important to City at the moment when the 3 point when the 3 points behind Liverpool. I think that's a fair point for Foden not being rested at the weekend.
Yeah, but I would have said that Haaland's too important for City to rest against Villa.
Oh, totally. I still think he's wrong. I think Foden does get rested, but I think it's a fair point.
Yeah. I think City are just so good, aren't they? Their second best players are good enough to get into like everyone by the top four, arguably.
Yeah, and here's a perspective from Maddie again regarding Tony. I think if you're a Tony owner, it's time to get rid. You can take players out. You just can't keep going, hoping he's going to return when there are better picks out there. And that's also a fair point and something I'm definitely considering. Just definitely not for Darwin. BW Splitter, thoughts on bringing Foden in if Morning News says he starts for Douglas Luiz would mean Muniz only plays if Saka doesn't. So would you bring Foden in to bench Muniz?
It's hard, right? Because you don't have Foden in either way, right? And it's not bad to have Foden in your team, full stop, over Douglas Luiz. Right. And if I made that transfer, I feel like I'd have to start Foden. My gut says Muniz outperforms him. Off the basis that we were saying, like, where I don't actually expect Foden to start. So I still prefer starting Muniz.
I think so too. I'd rather have the transfer in Muniz. Okay, I'm just starring some more of your questions here. Colm, with the quick turnaround this game week, it's a roll transfer type of week. I agree, Colm, with the quick turnaround, not just the quick turnaround, but the benching headaches. There are benching headaches. So when you have benching headaches, you probably don't need the transfer unless you're experiencing a little bit of FOMO. FPL Maddie wins a lot. Comes in again. I have Morris first sub. Would you take out Saka or just play him? And if he doesn't play, have Morris come on for him. Play Saka. Definitely play Saka, right?
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. Cool. I won't be late to pick up my kids. They'll be happy about that.
Must be the worst if you're late to pick them up on a Friday as well.
It is the worst. It dampens the Friday vibes. Then that like severs me, so I can't. I'm not allowed to experience it with them.
Yeah, you've ruined the Friday vibes for them, so then you're not allowed to partake in it.
Basically, yes. That's pretty much what it is. Kieran, my brother, thank you so much, man. Thanks again for stepping in here. It's always fun to share some Friday vibes with you.
Thanks a lot for having me on again. It was fun, as always.
As always. And I'll be in touch about once I get my fantasy challenge team set up. I'll send you a screenshot and we'll see how we're doing. I haven't checked any points after last game week. Thank you to everybody in the chat. Thank you to the haulers, which we will get to momentarily here. There we go. Thank you, haulers. I'm not going to read out all the names just in the interest of time because there isn't much time to kind of get this into the airwaves and through your ears into your brains. So I'm just going to leave you guys up on the screen and gals, of course. We love you very much. Really appreciate you. Love hanging out in Discord. And good luck in Game Week 32, everyone. And I'd say, again, expect disappointment because quick turnarounds always like asking for trouble. Kieran, as always, peace, brother.